Ariel Legend. God only knows how he got here. 1920s, Irish, could be anyone's guess. I heard he was with the rebels. I heard he was running for them. He'd racked up some kind of debt. Serious danger. My daddy always said he travelled here on foot. Walked rolling hills, slept by campfires in the dirt. He said everyone in Ireland was starving. Went double out of work after the famine. He said when he was a youngster, all his pals were starting new lives in America. New York City, the Big Apple. And he went to England. England. Anyway, he said he got the boat in the River Foyle. I heard he wanted to be a priest. Went to Liverpool. Fell in love with a pregnant Welsh woman, my mammy. He was shunned for the church. They ran away to Glasgow. He was a real legend, my daddy. Always telling tales. We never knew the truth, only what nosy neighbours thought or what the old chancer wanted to tell us. So legends are only half true. My daddy was so handsome, smiling blue eyes, blonde hair and a razor jaw. He worked hard, labouring stuff, lifting and carting mainly. He always had dirt under his nails and muck on his neck. All the women in our close loved him. He drove a motorbike sidecar and thought it was a ticket. My daddy was a bully. He chased me round the kitchen table. I fell and knocked my two front teeth out. Once he shirked my wee bra so much he wet the bed with oils in it. Carried something horrible, my daddy. But on his good nights, we would sit round the table playing cards. He'd cheat, obviously. And tell us about the water lapping on the white sand where he was fae, the horses, the dogs. Oh, my daddy loved dogs. You see, legends didn't need to be perfect. We just remember the good bits. Because we were dirt poor, but our house was always spotless. We had to work to chip in. I worked weekends in a shoe shop on top of my school. My older sister married young. My younger sister Moira helped my mammy brushing the flare, pressing the clays. My wee bra John was an apprentice welder. He was the apple of my mammy's eye. My daddy always said that he'd grow up saft, but my mammy just loved him so. She'd lost a couple of weans. It wasn't uncommon in the days. And she missed her country and her heart was sore. And my bra gave her something to dote about. The thing about immigrants is they can be who they want to be. They can reinvent themselves in every city. But everybody about us was Irish apart from my mammy. All the adults were from Mayo or Donegal, so we weren't any different. Still, they days being Irish wasn't safe. There was a deadly sense of shame. Shop windies had signs, "No Irish need apply." We could only work in certain trades. So my daddy kept his cell to himself and told the myths he wanted to tell while leaving out the true bits. My daddy was in the Air Force, left because he didn't like it. My daddy was a caretaker in the chapel in the Garn Guard, got in a fight with the priest, told him where to shove his job. My daddy never bought that collie dog off a guy in his work, it just followed him home. My daddy won the Grand National twice, couldn't find the betting slips. At work, he was Mick, at home, me Hall. And for all he talked, we didn't know him at all until my granny came to stay. And I came home from school one day and she was in the scullery table, wrapped in a crochet shawl. Her wee sparrow horns toasting away at the fire, jittering a cup of tea to her mouth whenever she felt able. My bra said she must have came in the boat. She sat there in a woolly jumper and a big thick skirt, her mouth a tight slit and her wee head tremoring so slightly that it almost felt as if it wasn't moving at all. She looked more like she travelled in a time machine than a boat. There was something ancient about my granny, not just her age, something we'd all forgotten about. She had wild blue eyes with wee crow feet, and I swear, if you looked closer, you could see the sea swirling and smashing in her iris. She didn't speak like us either. She talked in tongues to my daddy. She'd croak in this warrior tongue, and he would always answer in our language the way he always did, curt and firm and cold. And for the first few days, she did nothing at all. She slept in the chair, I think, because she was awake at bedtime and awake in the morn, a candle by night and the kettle boiling for her tea at sunrise. She didn't read. She didn't move. She just stared out the window as if it was the wee porthole of the ship she'd came here in. And then one day, I was horsing about, poaching for some food, then a wee nosy for a wee sweetie or a penny somebody had misplaced, and I heard a croak through the table. "Bring ye here now," it said. I looked up and my wee granny was smiling at me, rapping her wee thick fingernails off the wood beside her. "Bring yourself a chair now, and we can talk while lemons are out." A wee laugh cough snuck out. "And bring me bag too. I might have something for you." As I settled down beside, she rummaged pennies and papers, her knobbled fingers pulled out a giant toffee wrapped in a waxy paper. Just what I was looking for. And that's how we sat on our secret days, warmed by the fire, a sweet tea for her and a toffee for me. Some Wednesday night, I was telling her about our John, and she sipped her tea and looked at me, started fumbling in her bag. "Goody ma, agate," she crackled as I lifted it onto her lap. "Noo," she said, very official, "I'm not going to be here forever, so it's time that we talked about home." She pulled out a picture of herself as a young woman, blonde hair like my daddy. She was skin and bone, standing beside an iron fence on a patch of trampled grass. To her side was a wee house with a thatched roof and a wall of thick black stone. Beyond her, you could see hills and mare hills and then the ocean. She told me she was born 20 years after the famine had ended and her home was still a ghost town. They called it the Bad Life. Her family had buried so many friends. Everyone was skint and landlords were clearing out the houses, so the young'uns rushed the boats to America and Canada. Some would leave for Dublin or Belfast to work in the factories. Loads wound up in Glasgow. Or worse, the workhouse. She had five wains. Only my daddy and his sister survived. "That's terrible he left you in your ain," I says to her, welling up for her heartache. "No, no," she said. "It wasn't like that at all." She told me how my daddy's sister was the belle of the ball. She worked hard, always helping others on top of that too. She was smart, could have been a teacher. Then one night, her nose started to bleed. A red waterfall. It wouldn't stop. All the women in the village pitched in to help, the bloody rags mounting on the scullery flare. And as folk began to panic, she got weaker by the hour. The nearest doctor was a town away. And my daddy took his savings, travelled by night to get him. And when he arrived in the morn, his sister was gone. After she died, he packed his bags and left for Liverpool. Never went home. There were nae rebels, nae excommunications, nae debts, nae tall tales. Just grief. And my daddy couldn't take any more. And soon grief came to our door too. My wee granny wasted away in the box bed in the scullery. Her chest getting wheezy and skin going greyer by the day. At her funeral, my daddy didn't cry. We held awake in the back room of the pub and he just smoked and sighed. The last shadow of that cloud that had followed him for years had lifted. My brother and I stood at either side of his armchair. Drunk neighbours sang their tunes, my wee fingers gently combing the back of his hair. "Bring ye here now," he said, looking from one of us to the other. His cigarette rested between his fingers, he patted his lap of his good trousers. It was a rare invitation, so we scuttled round. He squeezed us tight together, slid his face against ours. "You have been so good today," he whispered. "I'm glad that we are all here together now."